Welcome to the Get Over Yourself podcast. This is author and athlete Brad Kearns discovering ways to be healthy, fit, and happy in hectic, high-stress modern life. So let's slow down and take a deep breath, take a cold plunge, and expertly balance that competitive intensity with an appreciation of the journey. That's the theme of the show. Here we go.
Like, where do I suffer more if I'm not the person that I need to be? And almost always it's at work, because that's where the place is. That's where you're earning your income. That's where your reputation and all of these things get, your ego gets wrapped up in, you know? So you see people trending towards like, well, if I'm going to prioritize a way to be, I got to be this way. And the person who loves me most, she's not going to leave me because she loves me, you know? So she's going to take the beating on this, you know? And I'm sure it goes both ways.
Obviously, some creativity can spring forth, but you can't be in that space all the time. If you actually want to be effective, like, there does have to be structure and commitment around the way you do your day. And so maybe that's what people are talking about with the bed, is just, you know, creating your life in a way where you have goals or you have things that you're committed to that you follow through with. In a way, it would be really difficult, because then he would come home and it's like, oh yeah, I have to turn my emotions back on, and now you're in my space and I have my whole life without you, but now you're here. And it was actually way more awkward than it was like a pressure release. So now it's just so much better because we're together, and then we can choose like, oh, I want a little space by myself. Cool. Yeah. I can go do something and then be excited that you're home when I get home. And so I think it was just, it's a lot more healthy. And I think it's actually one of the reasons that so many people within the fire department, the relationships are strained, because so many women do this. They have their own life. They have their own sort of system and circuit. And then the husband shows up and it's like, yeah. Oh, you're here.
This guy. Yeah.
But how long are you going to be here for? And you know, it's a very awkward thing. So I think for us, it's just been like, it's allowed us to be even more loving and more connected.
Perfect, perfect, perfect keto. They are makers of a complete line of keto-friendly supplements and food products. Many unique items that you won't find anywhere else. Everything with exceptional high quality and product cleanliness. That's right. They don't have any artificial ingredients, sweeteners, fillers, binders, or other crap. And they make a point at the company to emphasize education and living a keto-friendly lifestyle. So breaking free of kind of the gimmicks and the idea of swallowing a ketogenic supplement to lose weight. It's not about that. It's about staying aligned with your ketogenic dietary goals with high quality supplement products and the food products. I like to use the Perfect Keto base in and around my high intensity workouts. So what I'm doing is sipping this before, during, and after my sprinting or my high jumping sessions, thereby minimizing inflammation and free radical production at the very time when I need most to be clean burning. So check them out at perfectketo.com. And guess what? Buy one product and get 40% off the second one with the special screaming deal and the code BRAD40. Just go over to the bradkearns.com shopping page, click there, and you'll land on my custom designed homepage at perfectketo.com and automatically get that awesome discount. That's right. Buy one, get 40% off the second product, the best tasting, cleanest fuel on the market, perfectketo.com. Hey, I get to talk to super duper power couple of the universe, Vanessa and Adam Lambert. They operate a health and wellness consulting company called Be The Wellness, B-E-E, The Wellness, specializing in retreats, adventurous destination retreats where they go for big time lifestyle transformation with this total immersion experience. The camaraderie part and the free spirited part is the centerpiece. Vanessa is a real free spirit. She has an alternate ego by the name of Nesta Ray, where she's a singer, songwriter, performer. Ah, these guys are a lot of fun. And we were going to talk about the retreats and their career in the health and fitness space, but we ended up on this show getting into relationship dynamics, because these guys are fascinating. They live together, work together, travel together. Their lives are interwoven and completely on the same parallel track. Adam used to be a firefighter where he was gone for long stretches of time during their relationship. And now they've gone into chapter two where they're side by side, or actually face to face at their dueling stand-up desks where they spend a lot of their day planning the retreats and running the business, coaching people. And so we just get into a lot of that about what it's like to have sort of a long distance relationship where you're lonely a lot of times, and now where you're in each other's face all the times. And I love their perspective and their insight. So we get into that with a lot of content here. And then we're going to have a second show with them where we focus on the plant medicine world, and specifically the all-inclusive ayahuasca retreats that they host and organize. And this is new territory to me, so that's going to be show number two. But here, let's hear from a couple who's really making it work, changing other people's lives, and living the dream with their priorities in the right place. Adam and Vanessa Lambert of BeTheWellness.com. Adam and Vanessa, here in this fabulous white stand-up studio in beautiful Venice Beach, California.
Yeah, welcome.
I got you warmed up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you did.
I want you to get right into that again, because I was asking you about the fabulous Be the Wellness podcast. Mm-hmm. And what's your vision for it, how it's clarified recent times. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I think when we first started it, it was mostly Adam and I just supporting our programs and supporting the offerings that we had out there, giving coaching advice and connecting with our audience. And then we got really inspired to bring in guests that we were interested in, that we thought would bring interesting conversation or, you know, just further exploration to the podcast. And then I was saying that I started to get a little lazy, and then I started letting people sort of pitch me on their ideas. Mm-hmm. And started, you know, oh, okay, that might be cool. That might be a cool interview. And what I realized is that it really makes a difference that we select the people we want to have on the podcast, that the listeners can feel the difference between us being pitched and having someone on, as opposed to us selecting someone and inviting them on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And it's like, there is a percentage, obviously, of people that pitch and we're like, well, this sounds super cool.
Totally. You know,
like, never heard of this person. So it's like, it's awesome that that happens, but there's definitely a difference in like the overall vibe of what goes down in the podcast. And I think how it lands for the people listening, if it's like somebody that's on a book tour that's just looking for podcasts to get on and they come on ours. And even if it's super interesting, there's just something about that dynamic that's like less authentic.
You know?
You guys are those universe energy people.
Since I
first met you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
The people were gravitating towards your strength training sessions at the PrimalCon retreat.
Yeah.
It was just magic over there.
Oh,
You hear the giggling and the laughing. Someone's in some other group, some boring presentation 30 meters away at the beach. Like, what are those guys doing over there?
Yeah. What are they doing with that PVC pipe?
How to deadlift properly using a PVC pipe. That's no joke,
it's
man.
It's no joke. Actually, it's really hard.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that was awakening for me because I tweaked my back a few times.
Uh-huh.
And I had to get deep into that form and that perfect mechanics with a lower weight, of course. And watching Layla over and over, we filmed her doing a video. It's on YouTube. And I just like kept repeating it in slow motion. And Brian McAndrew and someone who knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But now I got the Hex Bar, which I think is
made it
a lot more protective. And
for sure.
Yeah. So go order one. This show is sponsored by Hex Bar.
Nice.
Unlimited.
Hexbar.com. Yeah.
Have you read the data suggesting that the male-female host dynamic is like super interesting, like people like that better?
No, but you were telling me this.
Yeah, and Bill Simmons grabbed like a female, you know, Bill Simmons, a sports guy, and he's got all these sports stuff, and he talks about TV shows and the Boston Celtics and like from a very male bent of, you know, crazy commentary going off track and all that. And now like this female's on there all the time. They probably read the same thing. Like, it just works on a certain level.
I think there's, you know, everyone naturally likes, going back to the energy, they like the yin and the yang. They like the masculine and the feminine. I think that all of us, no matter who we are as listeners, there's something in each side of it that you can relate to and that pulls out a different perspective for you. So I think that we just, you know, luckily happened to do it and happened to just be a male and a female who decided to do a podcast. And luckily that's catching on.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's interesting to think about, though. But I mean, that is a lot of the feedback that we get. Like, for a lot of our longtime listeners are like, we just like listening to you guys banter back and forth about stuff, you know, which is cool. I mean, hopefully it's actually imparting some level of, I don't know, information or something.
Or entertainment.
Yeah, but hey, man, I'll take it. Like, if you just want to listen to us, you know.
Relationship dynamics. You listen to Casey Neistat's podcast with his wife.
No.
The YouTube sensation. So he's a very prominent YouTube personality, and his wife's an anonymous, you know, she's been in a few of his videos. And so now they have their own podcast, Couples Therapy, it's called.
Oh, awesome.
And those guys go at it, man. I mean, it's like unplugged all the way. And they're like arguing and like, you know, she comes out, I didn't want to do this podcast because you're being such an asshole this week. And oh, it's entertaining. And it's also, They're, you know, his whole thing is the daily vlog. He started that, and, you know, he just exposes his life to the camera. And it's, you know, it's the difference between the manufactured media that we grew up with and had until just a few years ago. And now it's like, you know, it's extremely enlightening to hear a real couple talk it out without the sugar coating.
Oh, totally.
Not that you guys need to get into that relationship dynamic stuff, but, you know, just therapy.
It comes through.
Yeah. It comes through.
Well, it's been one of the biggest things for Adam as we've grown in our relationship is actually to have permission to argue, to just have permission to make space for that. And just,
are you saying on the mic or in general?
Just in general. I mean,
Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go, listeners.
Ready?
Bring it.
But I mean, I grew up with, so my mom was divorced, and part of the dogma of her mindset was that you shouldn't fight as a couple. So I heard a lot of this, like, well, if you don't get along, then maybe you shouldn't be in the relationship. There was all this stuff. And as we got older and our relationship got older, I was like, dude, you have to fight. You have to get this stuff out. You can't just shove it away in a corner. So it's been awesome for us to learn how to fight.
Yeah.
It's been helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's not like screaming and yelling and carrying on, but it's like, it's just that it takes, like, I think at the end of the day, if you have the RAM or like the energy to be able to have a, you know, rational and like adult tone conversation about things, that's probably better, you know. But like, if you don't have it, like in the moment, you just still got to get the information out, like one way or the other, you know. So even if you can't quite control your shit, so to speak, it's like, it's, I don't know, we found anyway for us that it's just better to get it out there and get it over with. And,
yeah. You know. And not take it so personally in the heat of the moment. You know, it's like, okay, maybe someone says something in a tone or in a way in the heat of the moment that if they were feeling more rational and maybe had more energy or more sleep or whatever, they wouldn't have said it that way. But we don't latch on to it like and become a victim around this moment. It's like, okay, well, that was a moment. How many other moments are we rational? Uh-huh. Are we loving? Are we, you know, able to sit down and work through it? So it's like, you just kind of have to leave some space for it though, because you're not going to be perfect in every moment.
Yeah. 80-20 it.
Yeah. It's 80-20 rule.
I mean, that's my follow up going on in my head. It's like, hey, 80-20 it, that's cool. And if it's 20-80,
yeah.
Honestly, when that's a moment and there's another moment and there's another moment and I'm sorry I called you an effing bitch. I really didn't mean it, sweetie. Come here. Let's have some makeup sex. You know, that kind of stuff is like,
totally.
we have to have that openness to free an exchange of dialogue and emotions, but also some kind of parameters where this is how we operate.
Agreed. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. That's a really good point, because actually people could hear that and think, oh, well, if they do it, maybe it's not that big of a deal. Or maybe
there go
it is.
Vanessa going off again. Adam, what's up?
Throwing stuff at me in the kitchen.
Yeah. I know. But it is, because I think the majority of the time is really thoughtful and really calm and communicative. And we do a lot of work on ourselves and we do a lot of work on our relationship. And so I think when it is that 20%, and I doubt it's even 20%, it's probably more like 5 or 10%. It's like, we just don't take it personally. We don't latch onto it as some big defining thing in our relationship, because so much of it is the opposite.
Yeah, you have that healthy foundation, which counts for so much. John Gottman, a relationship expert, one of the best guys out there for a long time. And he says healthy, long-term, successful couples have a 20-to-1 ratio of positive to negative comments in ordinary life and a 5-to-1 ratio during an argument.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to start.
You're gonna start keeping
track. Keeping track. Yeah.
Yeah. But when you can envision a healthy exchange, where's the contentious issues being
being there.
Yeah.
I totally want to support your dream to go skydiving, and you've worked so hard and you're a great provider and you're so good at saving money. And I see that you have the money to go pay for it. And I know you're safe and you're fit and you're all this, and I don't want you to fucking skydive, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So that was like five or seven. Yeah. And then we dropped the one in there.
Right.
It makes for a better discussion than
it really does.
Over my dead parachute, whatever.
Right. Yeah. Here's the 10 reasons you suck, and I'm going to throw parachuting right in there with it. Yeah.
Well, I think that, you know, it just takes a certain level of emotional intelligence, and emotional intelligence is related to general intelligence, like how you are about life, how you notice the way that you react to life, that you interact with life. And I think that that's something that, you know, you just have to take personal responsibility at some point with the way you are about things, and your relationship is no different. And so, you know, if you are only great at work and you only have, you know, you're intelligent within your career path, but nowhere else, at some point you have to just expand out that learning scape and start to create some new tools in the other parts of your life.
Yeah, yeah. Freaking hope so.
Yeah.
But there's so many peak performers that just nail it in one area of life, mm-hmm. but they don't have the RAM, as Adam says.
Yeah.
Perhaps as an excuse there. They're so focused on their important super duper career, they don't have time for partner or family.
Yeah.
But it seems like if you have all those things in place, you should be able to just turn that dial over into another realm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the funny thing about it is if you don't take the time for it, you're only going to make it more complex, because if you don't make the time for your family, you're only going to create more animosity, more negativity, more distance, all these things that are going to be bigger to overcome later on in life. And so it's almost like it's crazy to think you don't have the RAM, because it's going to require the least amount now on the front end compared to the back end.
Yeah.
And I think that's just that's where the intelligence comes in, right? That's where, like, just looking at it intelligently to say, oh, okay, how can I be wise about this? It's just like an investment strategy with your money. It's the same with your energy. Like, if I don't do this right now, it's only going to be harder later.
It's going to fester.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Same with speaking up, like you talked about at the start of this.
Yeah, definitely.
You can't have that happening.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting one, because so in my previous life, you know, there were times where to perform at that level of
firefighting.
Yeah, exactly. And to perform at that level, like, you're certainly not encouraged to go about things diplomatically. You know, it's not a democracy whatsoever. You know, it's like who's in charge, and hopefully they take some level of input from the people around them, like the good ones do. But there's like, so I'm imagining a person who's crushing it in that world, you know, and every decision that they make is their decision to make, and everybody just falls in line with what it is. And they get a lot of positive feedback for it, because fundamentally they're nailing that aspect of their life. To be able to flip the switch and come into their family dynamic and not have that level of sort of autonomy to operate and the way that they work can be really challenging, you know. And I mean, there's a reason that the divorce rate in the fire service is well over 50, probably into the 75% range. And this is for multiple divorces. You know, it's like, I worked with so many guys who were on their third, maybe sometimes their fourth, which at some point you're like, dude, why do you keep doing this? Like, what part of this is like, just have a girlfriend, you know, like just call it, just, you know. But it's a real thing, you know. And I think you see a similar situation kind of in the high power executive world as well, where they're the masters of their domain, and functioning at that level becomes like it's like the measure that the rest of their life is held up against. You know, it's like, I crush it here, and the reason that I crush it here is because I don't allow for any of this bullshit that's going on. You know, everybody knows exactly what's expected of them. They perform. You know, and that doesn't work at home.
You go home to your wife with that mindset. It's maybe not as effective.
Yeah, not as effective, but then it just creates this like this dissonance for the person, you know, and they're like, wow, okay, so now I have to be this person when I'm at work, and I have to be this person when I'm at home. And that's really challenging to do. So which of the two things, like, where do I suffer more if I'm not the person that I need to be? And almost always it's at work, because that's where the place is. That's where you're earning your income. That's where your reputation and all of these things, your ego gets wrapped up in, you know? So you see people trending towards like, well, if I'm going to prioritize a way to be, I got to be this way. And the person who loves me most, she's not going to leave me because she loves me, mm-hmm. you know, so she's going to take the beating on this, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm sure it goes both ways. Like, I'm sure there's, you know, high powered women executives out there that come home and beat their husbands, you know?
Yeah.
So. Figuratively speaking.
Figuratively, yeah.
Well, I just had an amazing podcast with John Gray, the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, mm-hmm. number one best-selling relationship author of all time.
Awesome.
And his insights were pretty amazing along these lines. And one of the things is like, this is all new stuff.
Right.
Because we had these traditional gender roles that went for centuries. Eons back to hunter gatherer times, we know the women got most of the food, the females and the men were doing the physical hunting of the animals. And so we come into industrial revolution and it was the man's workplace world and the women was nurturing, caretaking. And so he talks, his new book, Beyond Mars and Venus, talks about the hormonal underpinnings of relationship dynamics and what works and when things get out of balance. And one of them is like the females in the workplace is a wonderful progress for society, but the workplace is a testosterone dominant, he calls it male dominant, not to offend a female in the workplace, but it's a testosterone dominant, competitive, focused, driven, solve problems, all these things. So a female in the workplace is going against her estrogen, testosterone, hormonal balance. Mm-hmm. So she needs to unwind when she gets home, which means she needs to vent to her partner with her partner sitting there and listening quietly, not offering a solution. All those old time Mars and Venus insights. And the man needs to constantly nurture and rebuild testosterone. So he can't be in a relationship where there's bickering and complaining because the man wants to feel like a super powerful problem solver, crushing it at work, crushing it at home.
Yeah.
Right.
And so the couple can set these dynamics up where you're playing to his strengths and you're playing to her strengths and everything can be wonderful, but we have to recognize, wow, we're fighting a battle against the gender balance in modern culture.
Right. Yeah. Again, this comes back to just intelligence, emotional intelligence, right? Because many people wouldn't even know to think about that. They wouldn't even think, well, oh, I'm going against the cultural or gender norms. This is what it takes these days, I think, is to really look at what's there for each couple individually and to zoom out and say, okay, what's our dynamic? What are the things that we're battling with? And what are the tools that we can implement to overcome it or to master this piece of our life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder how that's going for him with that. You know, there's just so much sort of outrage just ready to be unleashed upon anybody that says gender and associates it with something like what we were just talking about right there. You know, I wonder how he's doing with that.
because it's same with like the PC stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and my son's like, he's pretty sensitive and into that stuff. And, you know, he'll give me a hard time for rapping at the start of the podcast because I'm impersonating or I'm appropriating someone else's culture.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And, you know, when I was younger, there was some different acceptance levels of stuff and everybody would imitate Jimmy Walker, Dynamite JJ on the show.
Yeah.
As a funky black dude with a floppy hat.
Right.
And he was so funny. He was the funniest guy in America. It's like, well, that's not that funny now.
Yeah.
Right.
Cause you know, it's an indoctrinated prejudicial thinking and stuff.
Right.
So you have to be more careful.
Extra.
But I like when people like that hit hard. Wendy Walsh was on my show, the relationship therapist. And so that's why we're sticking on this subject. It's one of my favorites. But she's saying like, the top three things a male and a female look for in a relationship. No matter what you say, come out of your mouth. Like number one is sense of humor. Nope, not really, because your genetic drives are looking for something else. For female, it's number one, resources, number two, intelligence, and number three, kindness.
Mm-hmm.
So the females want the Ferrari more than anything else. Doesn't matter if he's funny or sweet when polite. No, resources, intelligence to go get more resources if he loses his resources.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then kindness is cool to land in there.
Yeah.
And the man wants number one, youth and beauty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
Because fertility is concealed by humans. So you don't know if you're the father, so to speak,
and
that's your main genetic drive in life.
Right.
So you want a female who's loyal rather than going out and maybe getting impregnated by six other random people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then number three is kindness.
Yeah.
So
at least kindness made it in there on all
sides.
Yeah.
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 Both sides.
So we cut to, you know, today's balancing all this stuff and, you know, saying everything you got to say in a relationship with loving kindness would be like a goal, using that emotional intelligence and knowing. This is where I think you guys got into some magic there. Like you expressed that you have this baseline level of respect, this foundation.
Definitely. Yeah.
So anything that's said, even if it's a little charged, you're going to back it up a little bit. And maybe you've figured out like your wisdom of strategies.
Yeah.
Going, okay, I hear you. Let's sit down and talk about this further rather than calm the F down. Like things that you should never, ever say to a female who's in estrogen imbalance, right?
Yeah.
But man, to unwind some of this stuff and realize like my goal, you know, is and with producing a podcast and listening to podcasts is like, we want to continue to progress, man.
Right.
We don't want to repeat these same mistakes. Mm-hmm. Otherwise we're stupid instead of intelligent, literally, right?
Well, and I think it's, you know, it's actually goes deeper for all of us than we tend to think. And I think that's what's been really helpful for Adam and I is that we've really taken our relationship work has taken on a sense where we work deeply on ourselves, looking at what was the thing that started this behavior way back when we were kids. What's the thing that we're arguing right now? But where did this start for one of us individually or together? What was the, you know, thing that happened to us in third grade that made this first wall go up or this first reaction? And it goes deep. You know, and oftentimes what you're arguing about in the moment is literally something that was created decades ago. And so I think it just really takes time to sift through the files of your life together and go, you know, why do I react that way? Why am I self-conscious about that thing? Like, where does it come from? And I think that that's really where the magic has been for us is going and doing that really deep, deep work.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, and then we been together forever, you know, so it's like at some point, you know, and it'd be interesting to know what the statistic is on marriages based on like when, how old the people were when they got married. You know what I mean? It's like, are young marriages more apt to fail than people who get married later in life or what that number is? But I could probably argue either way. I mean, I have no idea what it is, but I know for us, it's like we were kids fundamentally when we got married. And fortunately, the way that we progressed through it was by kind of growing up together, not growing away from each other, which you could 100% see how that would happen. I mean, I'm a completely different person at 42 than I was at 25, like no doubt. And so is Vanessa. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been fortunately.
Shit, how old are you, Vanessa?
I'm 40. I just turned 40 this year.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. That's
I mean, you were like 20 something when I saw you at Primal.
Just a kitten.
I was like 2009, maybe.
Yeah.
That was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I know. It's crazy. We're all grown
up. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You guys look good. I'll say you look the same as when I saw you.
Yeah. Thanks, Brett. Yeah. You just keep clicking away, you know, like year after year. It's like, whoop, there's one more.
Here comes one more. Yeah.
And they go faster too, for whatever reason. But yeah, I mean, if you can find it within yourself to grow along with and in support of your partner, it's a, you know, that's what we've been fortunate enough to be able to cultivate is like literally we both recognize we're turning into different people. And I think it was, who's the guy that wrote the prophet?
The Celestine prophecy?
The
prophet, Cahil Gibran.
Yeah. So there was a passage in that book or like short list of insights or whatever you want to call that, where he talked about marriage and how the marriage should be looked at like a house where there's two columns supporting the house, you know, the husband and the wife. And then the closer together the columns are, the less stable the house is. And so you need this separation and distance between each other, and you both have to be able to stand on your own for it to stand up. Mm-hmm. And I read that probably as part of my required reading early on in our relationship. And that piece really stuck with me.
That's a funny joke, Adam. Isn't that everybody? Yep. It was recommended reading by Vanessa Lambert.
Yeah.
There was a list. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we just had James Redfield, who wrote the Celestine Prophecy, on the podcast last week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Right on.
And,
that book was another one kind of in that same time frame. And, you know, I've been really fortunate in our relationship that Vanessa is just, you know, she doesn't put up with a lot for very long, but it's not just criticism. It's like, look, here's some things that I think would help, you know, you see things my way.
You'd be better.
you know, you can do this, which is great. Like I'm a lifelong learner and I read like a lot, you know? So it's like, you want to give me a book about something that you think is going to be helpful, I'm definitely going to read it, you know? And so The Prophet and Celestine Prophecy were two of those things that was like, oh, okay. It just kind of opens up my, you know, or opened up my thought process on like how the shifts of energy and interaction between people and all of this stuff plays out.
And, and the third book was, Shut the Fuck Up. what's one of the best seller lists now? Oh, Unfuck Yourself.
Yeah.
Here you go. Merry Christmas, my love. Yeah. Yeah, the totally. Celestine Prophecy, The Prophet, and Unfuck Yourself.
Yeah.
And here's another one. Make your fucking bed, because it's always messy in there.
Yeah. 12, isn't that, Jordan Peterson's new book, right? The 12.
Oh, right.
Rules,
right.
Really, yeah. Basically, yeah. Like rule one, make your bed.
Yeah.
If you can't make your bed every day, like you need to not worry about what else is going on with the world. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I call that one out and challenge it.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. The bed making one.
Just like all the hype we're subjected to now and all the gurus telling us how to live and how you can be almost as good as me, but not quite if you do everything
right.
I say. And
right.
It gets to be too much. It's like so much content coming in and like,
agreed.
You can easily feel diminished. Like when you look at social media and there's people on the beach with their glass and you're, you know, raking leaves or whatever.
Yeah.
So like making your bed is this magical life changing thing.
Yeah.
And then in many European countries, the custom is to leave the bed unmade all day.
Mm.
And they've done scientific studies showing that the microbes escape and allow the gases to circulate and make it more healthy rather than trapping all those mini farts under the covers every morning by making your bed.
Yeah.
So Brad Kearns is saying, I mean, there may be a lot of good insights in the best-selling book of that title. I don't know about it. I don't want to trash that at all.
Right.
It might be a gateway to saying, be responsible and set goals.
Exactly. I think that's
physically, the physical act of making your bed, you know,
questionable.
Go ahead if you want, or if you don't want, you can still be a tidy person that's productive all day.
Yeah,
I think it's just about creating systems that you're willing to stick to, because I do think that from chaos, obviously some creativity can spring forth, but you can't be in that space all the time. If you actually want to be effective, like there does have to be structure and commitment around the way you do your day. And so maybe that's what people are talking about with the bed, is just, you know, creating your life in a way where you have goals or you have things that you're committed to that you follow through with.
Vanessa's staring right at me. My eyes are darting around because she's talking. She's going right into my heart, pulling it out of my chest and speaking to it in a emphatic voice. But you're talking to me. I'm listening, because that's a big one. I mean, you can get that creativity run wild. I mean,
I've been that person.
Okay, keep talking, girl.
Yeah, I'm that creative person. And so, but if you stay within that creative space all the time, all you do is just create more chaos. At some point, you have to take that creativity and you have to understand how to create structure around it in order to make something possible with it. This has been the biggest challenge for me, and I think I'm getting better and better out of it. But the reason I am is because I've learned how to commit to systems. And if you don't have any systems, any structure in your life, then eventually you're just going to feel the chaotic energy of all that creativity. And it's beautiful. We need it. We need that part of us and we want to nurture it. But at some point you have to put the container around it to actually make it into something beautiful that people can relate to and that they can experience from you.
What's an example where you applied a systematic approach to a creative idea?
Well, you know, so Adam and I kind of have different seats in our business, and I'm the
visionary.
The visionary is really what it comes down to, which is just a way of saying like I'm the idea person, because that's what I love. I love coming up with ideas. And so the retreats and all the events that we run is a really good example of that, because I come up with these awesome concepts. Wouldn't it be amazing to take a group to Peru and hike, you know, do the Salkantay Trail and hike to Machu Picchu? And, you know, it's all this great creative fodder. But how do you actually put that into action? And so it turns out that you have to create the systems. Like, what is the actual, what are the dates? What are the actual requirements for this? How much does it cost? How many people can we take? What kind of training do we need to be able to accomplish that? And Adam's really helpful with me and has helped me get more structured in this, because, you know, he's more of the engineer mind. So he's very helpful in getting me kind of laid out or lined out on things so that then I can take action. But, you know, I can sit around and think about all the amazing trips that there could be to take people on. But at some point I have to take action and create structure to make it happen.
Yeah. Lots of spreadsheets.
Lots of spreadsheets.
Right.
Yeah.
And methodically tracking things, which I identify as one of my weaknesses. Like, I've now done 50 podcasts, and how do they compare? What's the download? Yeah. What are the trends? What are the main topics? I don't know, but
right.
Some of my favorites were Adam and Vanessa, John Gray, Mia Moore show right up there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
I totally understand that. Yeah.
I like that blend. And then you guys have two people, so you can yin and yang
difference.
That all day long.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's important for people to find that counterbalance. So if that doesn't all exist within you, maybe you have a business partner, or maybe you have a business coach, or maybe you have someone that helps to create that structure, because that's not your default setting. And so I don't think that necessarily if it's not your strong suit, you should force yourself into mastering it to the point where you're sick about it, but maybe get masterful enough where you find someone who can help you get organized, or you find a system that works well enough to get you organized. But if you just let that stuff run rampant, then you actually end up being more dissatisfied about your creativity, because it's always disappointing. You have all these great ideas and all this great energy, and it looks so beautiful in your mind, but it never is created in reality that way. And then you get disappointed, and that's just like a point of diminishing returns, you know, a negative feedback loop.
Love it. It's time for a deep breath.
Yeah.
Yes.
Soak that in.
Yes.
So also there's maybe more commonplace than it was in the past, but you have this dynamic duo here. So you're mm-hmm. working and living life together. And I wonder pros and cons, like what are your observations?
Well, so it's actually kind of an interesting study for us, because like I said before, when I worked for the fire department, I was gone almost, like, if we totaled it up over the 22 years, I was probably gone 50% of that time. Like not in the home, not spending the night there.
You got the complete spectrum here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, and often not really reachable. You know what I mean? So it's like, not like I'm off on a business trip, but we're going to Skype tonight.
I was at Whole Foods and I didn't know what kind again. You didn't answer my text.
Exactly.
I was in a fire break number 14.
Yeah, exactly.
On the pass.
Yeah. And we literally, all the cell towers burned down. So like, what do you want? You know, but
what kind of excuse is that?
But this is,
where's your sat phone?
Yeah. Like, come on, get it together. It's technology for that. But so we've gone from that world where, like, literally gone all the time to, and worked together in that world as well for the last 4 or 5 years, realistically, to now, since July, I'm home full time. Like, we haven't spent more than 2 days apart, mm-hmm. I think, since July, which is like, we've never done that in the 15 years that we've been married, you know? And so it's an interesting study, actually, to see. And it was one of the things that both of us were kind of most concerned about with me leaving that job and coming into the business full time. Is like, well, we've never been together this often, you know, for this long. But it's actually, it's been working really well. Mm-hmm. Like, so much of the, I don't know, I guess the lack of, or the loss of momentum in what we're doing, both with our relationship and with the business and all of the things going on that would happen when I left and went to work, you know, necessarily happened when I left and went to work, doesn't exist anymore. So it's like, now that time that I was gone, fundamentally, that space is, and time is eaten up in us getting to do stuff together. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, we're still working on the business the same amount of time, but now we have time to just kind of be together and chill, which didn't exist before. It was like, I was at work and then I was home. And when I was home, it was work until I left, mm-hmm. you know, and now there's some room to breathe, you know, which is nice.
Yeah. And it's like, for me, I was sort of probably opposite in terms of, like, when he would leave, it's almost like I would turn off the emotional switch, because you only can miss someone for so long, for so many years of your life. You're just like, it's not a fun place to live. It's not a fun place to be like, oh, he's leaving again for half the week. It's like, I would, after a while, I just tend to just kind of turn the emotions off. Like, mm-hmm. okay, he's gone.
Later, dude.
Yeah. Like, they just don't think about it, because otherwise you're just in like suck land about it, him being gone all the time. So in a way it would be really difficult, because then he would come home and it's like, oh yeah, I have to turn my emotions back on, and now you're in my space and I have my whole life without you, but now you're here. And it was actually way more awkward than it was like a pressure release. So now it's just so much better because we're together and then we can choose like, oh, I want a little space by myself. Cool. I can go do something and then be excited that you're home when I get home. And so I think it was just, it's a lot more healthy. And I think it's actually one of the reasons that so many people within the fire department, the relationships are strained because so many women do this. They have their own life. They have their own sort of system and circuit. And then the husband shows up and it's like, oh, you're here.
Who's this guy?
But how long are you going to be here for? And you know, it's a very awkward thing. So I think for us, it's just been like, it's allowed us to be even more loving and more connected.
Good answer.
So, which is awesome because we were worried.
It could have gone the other way.
We were like, oh, I hope this works out.
Well, you seem to have made it work for those years when you had the realities of a first responder career and so forth. So possibly there's some good attitudes behind the surface because I feel like there's times when it doesn't work in both directions. You know, commonly the person retires from the workplace and the man's around the house all day and the wife is going crazy and telling him to go get another job. They've been looking forward to this day for so long. And that's tough.
It's real, man. I mean, I see it all the time. You know, it's getting like later on in my career, guys that I've been working with start to retire, you know, a couple of people that are a little bit older than me, you know, and they're gone for maybe 6 months and then they're back. And you're like, what happened? Like, I just couldn't do it. Like, you know,
gotta get out of the house.
I can't spend this much time at home. And you're like, wow, okay.
Oh, and I have like a lot around this because it's, I think that a lot of times, you know, intimacy, there's almost a lack of intimacy in a way in a lot of these relationships because they've started out with being separate a lot of the times. And oftentimes men choose these jobs because they're uncomfortable being very intimate. Like the intimacy is difficult for them. So a lot of times they choose these careers where they're separate because it's uncomfortable for them to really dig into those pieces of themselves. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of firemen and police officers and whatever. That's not the case, but it's something that I've seen. And I was a firefighter. So like I've been within it. You could see these, you know, almost this level of discomfort for these men to be deeply embedded in their families and in their relationships. It's more comfortable for them to be with their boys.
That's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I mean, it doesn't have to be firefighter police. No. To be the lawyer.
Totally.
Oh, for sure. Working hours person who then goes to the card games on Tuesday and the gym on Wednesday and the golf course and all that.
Yes.
Just avoidance. Yeah.
Avoidance. And it takes a certain, again, it comes back to that emotional intelligence. Like, does it make you uncomfortable in those, in the intimacy of your relationship? And, you know, and it's not about just sex. It's about like the deeply intimate connection in your life. And so I think that's something that a lot of men have to learn. They have to cultivate or else it's just easier to go, I'm just going to, you know, push that aside.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to separate, you know, and this is something I know it happens in the first responder world. And obviously it happens in the military, but there's levels of stresses and things that you go through, like life events that you experience with your work family, like with the people that, whether it's your platoon, whether it's your fire station, whether it's your partner, if you're a cop, however that works out. You go through shit with those people that you do not go through with your family, hopefully, you know, I mean, cause it, you know, and there's also this tendency in that environment. And I think it cuts both ways. Like sometimes it's the person who is in the job and sometimes it's the significant other at home who shuts down that level of that communication. But if you don't have the ability to talk to your significant other about the kinds of things that are happening and you're experiencing at work, like if that gets shut down anywhere along the line, then all of a sudden, the only place that person feels comfortable is with the people that they've experienced this with, you know, and that happens a lot. And the same thing happens for the person at home because they've got experiences happening in their day-to-day world. You know, it's like, you know, not to like demean it or whatever, but it's like, yeah, we were on our way to soccer practice and, you know, Johnny got hit by a car and, you know, lost his skateboard and this thing. And there's this like thing that happened that the other person wasn't part of, you know? And so now if that dynamic of communication about what this kind of stuff is like doesn't exist, then you put up another barrier between, you know, for that kind of stuff. And it's, it's a tricky one, you know? And I mean, like I worked with a lot of people who never talked about anything that happened at work at home, because, and then like, this is verbatim from guys' mouths, like, yeah, well, when I first started dating my wife, I'd come home and tell her about stuff. And she's like, I don't want to hear about that. That's terrible. I don't want to hear about that. So one time she said that, and 20 years go by and he never says anything ever again. And she's like, I don't understand why you're so distant from me. And he's like, well, you told me, you know, when you were 19, you told me you didn't want to hear about this terrible traffic accident I was at. And he's like, well, shit, man, you know,
it's
you,
my life.
Yeah. It's like, you gotta,
you don't want to hear about my life then.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's how, and that's just kind of how it gets embedded. And you're like, oh, okay, well, I guess, you know, and especially not to like harp on this stuff too much, but there's often a feeling of shame around having these things impact you. So like in the fire service, especially, and it's getting better now, but it's like, suck it up, buttercup. People die all the time. Like, why is this impacting you? Mm-hmm. You know, and when you're brand new and all the guys you're working with have been doing it for 15 or 20 years, they're salty and crusty. And like, they don't even remember what just happened on that call, but it was the first time you ever did CPR and had a person die, and you're having a very different experience than those guys are, you know? And the feedback you get is, whatever, man, go to sleep. Tomorrow's another day. We're going to do it again, you know, and then to go home and kind of get the same thing, or like, I don't want to hear about that, can really close that stuff down, you know, and it's tough to get out of that spiral, you know?
And like you said, this is, you know, kind of acute circumstances, but this happens in everyday life and all careers, all of this
for
stuff
sure.
happens in relationships all the time. And so, yeah, it all just comes back to that, like, being keenly aware about how you are about things. You know, do I make space for my partner to share with me who he is, what his day is about? And, or do I just, am I so self-absorbed? And, you know, we're all so busy. I don't even mean that as an insult. We're so busy dealing with what we have at hand that it's often hard to make that extra space because we don't even feel like we have enough space to get done what we need to get done.
Right.
And so it takes a lot of presence in your life to be aware of these little moments that turn into big ways of being.
So to get that space and rebalance that life, we really should go on retreats, I think.
We should.
Yes. Yes, actually.
So you guys have had this interesting journey in the primal paleo scene, dating back to kind of the very beginnings of the hotbed of Chico, California.
Yeah.
So I want to hear about that and how all the influencers kind of emanated out of there and went on to long careers spreading the word, and how it's gone for you guys.
Yeah. So we started training with Rob Wolf at NorCal Strength and Conditioning prior to it being CrossFit NorCal. So whenever that was, so that had to be like 2005 or six, something like that. And it's funny because when we first started training there, like, he didn't even mention, like, paleo wasn't really a thing. Like, I think Art Devaney's book was out, but it wasn't like a word that you were familiar with in a diet perspective.
2006. Yeah. There were no books out. Lauren Cordain's book was out in 2002, but the movement was nowhere.
Yeah. It just wasn't really happening. So you go and start training, and Rob would just sort of like start to incrementally introduce concepts like what you're eating.
Sugar.
Yeah. Like what you're eating might actually be influencing how you're performing. You know, and it's like, what is this madness? You know,
do you sell gels here?
Yeah.
Sorry. No.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Is there anything that's going to make me really strong and I can, you know, recover better and I don't have to change anything about the way I eat? Yeah, no. But he was really kind of obviously instrumental in shifting our focus on that stuff. And Vanessa actually, when we were training there, because Chico is an agricultural hotbed, right? And so if you suffer from seasonal allergies, like, Chico is probably going to be brutal for you. And that was exactly the situation with Vanessa when she moved there. Mm-hmm. It was like, it was terrible. And actually her aunt said, hey, you know what? You should try cutting gluten and dairy from your diet, and this will help with your seasonal allergies.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's bullshit. I don't know, you know, witch doctor, what could this have to do with anything? And so she actually came home from training one day at the gym, and she's like, Rob says cutting gluten and dairy is like exactly what's up.
Yeah.
And
he said,
like,
my diet's legit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn it.
I know. Adam was really sad about that moment. And I was like, you know, feeling so teacher's pet at that point.
Yeah. Like at the end of the day, that was really the introduction to it. And then it was, you know, Rob started doing seminars and stuff for CrossFit. And I got to participate in sort of the betas of some of those at the gym and really started to get into this and was like, man, this really makes a lot of sense. You know, like everything that you're saying here makes a tremendous amount of sense. And we started making these changes in our life. And then as the gym grew and people started coming in and we started working there and training there, you could just see it immediately when people would come in and they'd be training for maybe a month or so, and they're getting some level of results. And then all of a sudden they make the switch in their diet and it's like it's a panacea, mm-hmm. so to speak. And it, so that really just got kind of ingrained in us. And I started taking what we were doing at NorCal and trying to apply it to work, you know, for my guys at the fire station. I was a captain at the time. So I had a station full of dudes that I was, you know, responsible for keeping healthy and staying fit enough to do the job. And we just started massaging this stuff out and was like, yeah, this is the jam, you know, like this is kind of what you need to be doing. You know, you need to eat meat and you need to eat vegetables and you need to not eat these other things, at least for a period of time, and train responsibly. And that ethos just spiraled into our business fundamentally, you know, I mean, there's a lot of steps along the way.
Yeah. And it just permeated the culture of the gym. And, you know, that time in our lives was so important because we were CrossFitting for one, which basically means suffering. We were suffering deeply in our workouts and doing really hard things physically, but we were doing them with people in our gym who became great friends because, you know, it's just like anything that you do that is hard. When you do it together, it bonds you. And so we had this group of friends who was eating the same way we were eating, training the same way we were, and we were having these really intense experiences together. And from that culture just sprouted out a lot of amazing business opportunities and ideas. And, you know, Sarah Fragoso came out of that time, and Glenn Cardoza, who's written all the books, yeah. And Katie Cardoza, and, you know, just our whole group started to kind of figure out how we could take this information and the success that we'd had with each other and with our experience with Rob and kind of mold it into our own offering into the world. And that was when we moved to LA, when Rob introduced us to Mark, and that's how we met you. And, you know, just kind of continued to spiral into, you know, how can we make a difference? How can we take this energy and this success that we've had and turn it around and pay it forward? And what can be our unique contribution in that sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And a big piece of it is the community aspect. I mean, it was, I think for both of us, it was the only time in our lives that we had fundamentally stuck to a consistent strength and conditioning regimen and a consistent nutrition plan for years on end, mm-hmm. without it seeming like it was a thing, you know. It's like all of a sudden this is just how we are, you know. And a big piece of that was the community, just like Vanessa said. It's like these people, we train together, we eat together, we're doing all of this stuff together. And so fostering that community was a big part of the impetus for Be the Wellness and how our coaching programs work, which are fundamentally community coaching. I mean, we work with individuals, but it's everybody together in the same experience. And that makes a really big difference for folks who are remote and isolated, and you're out there and you're the only one who's like, I want to give this a shot, and you're surrounded by people who just don't support it. You know, you need something to kind of to foster that. And then with the retreats, it was really just an extension of that community. Now we've built this community. Now let's bring everybody together in person to meet each other and really do this. And
yeah, yeah, and use that health and fitness and you know, motor skill or whatever it is that we're cultivating within the strength and conditioning and the programming. Like, how can we come together and use it in a fun and unique way? And that's really where the retreats have blossomed from, is just, you know, we always say, like, what mountain do you want to climb, or what river do you want to raft? Like, what do you want to do with the health? Because you're not going to get a blue ribbon for like, oh, you're healthy, good for you. The real prize is in the how you use it. And so that's always been an important piece of our business and our offering, is how can we get people out using this physical ability that they've been working so hard to cultivate in these life-changing, amazing experiences.
So are you doing some adventures, some physical adventures on the retreat, and blending that with lectures, workshops for different stuff? What is it like?
Yeah, we have so many various offerings, but for instance, we're taking a group and doing a 10-day hike to Machu Picchu in Peru. So we're on the trail for 7 days. We do the Salkantay Trail. We crest up over 15,000 feet. You know, it's a pretty intense, rigorous, 7-day hike that we do. And so that's one of our offerings. We do a retreat in Costa Rica every year where we teach people surfing, whitewater rafting, hiking. We kind of just combine all these different things that are accessible in Costa Rica because it's just like an adult playground. And then, on the flip side of it, we were just in Africa and we did an African safari, which wasn't necessarily as physically demanding, but was more just about going out and connecting with our tribe and doing just something incredible and having an experience of a lifetime together. So we kind of run the gamut, but it's all about having that community. If you're going to go to Africa and you're going to be on safari, why not be with the people that are in your online community where you're doing your training, you're talking about health and fitness, you know that these are your people, and having these awesome paleo meals and knowing that you're going to be fed really well and taken really good care of, it's like it just makes these once in a lifetime experiences even more special because you're sharing them with these people that are your friends. They feel like family.
So you're bringing the food along, you're setting them up with healthy meals, whether it's Africa or Costa Rica or Peru.
Yeah, it's pretty much
across the board. Checking a lot of bags or something.
Yeah, so oftentimes there's in-house chefs wherever we go, and we just make sure that the menus are created in a way that supports the dietary agreements that we have.
Yeah.
And or we have a private chef that we work with a lot, and we'll bring her along to our events as well. Yeah. So it just depends on where we're going and what the situation is.
Yeah, and maybe not surprisingly, once you get outside the States, it's actually a lot easier to eat paleo and primal. What I mean? Like
it's just food,
you know?
Okay, that was our pull quote for the show. Yeah. Note to Dan, audio engineer. I mean, how trippy is that?
Yeah.
It's so much easier when you get out of the States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And to like really sort of seal that point to some degree, in Peru, we had set the dietary restrictions and we'd set all of this stuff up. And when we got there, and like it was like, looking through the menus and all of this, we're like, wait a second, what is this? Like, why do we have gluten-free pasta on the menu? Like, what is going on here? When in reality, like what's available to be eaten here is meat and vegetables and 700 varieties of potato, which is kind of handy. And what they were doing was trying to meet our requirements by shifting their natural normal diet, which actually met the requirements. Right,
here come the Americans.
Here come the Americans. We're gonna, create
some beige stuff.
Pasta. Yeah, exactly.
They don't eat gluten, so we're gonna have to use gluten free pasta. And we're like, wait a second,
no.
Like, what are those guys eating? Like, that's what we want. Like, this is what we meant by this, And obviously, it was a simple problem to solve and get that sorted out. But it's an interesting thing to think about in the grand scheme. These sort of more traditional cultures are often eating so much closer to what what we're striving for and paying arguably twice as much to do in the States that you would be to shop at 7-Eleven
if corporate forces have not descended upon these poor countries and slammed the stuff home. I go to Sayulita, Mexico, and it's coming up in popularity, but it's a sleepy surfing village outside of Puerto Vallarta, and you go to the restaurants there and have some of the most incredible food and delicious, nutritious. There's a breakfast buffet where they have the pumpkin and the other vegetables and the meat all together, and then you go around the corner and there's a freaking, might as well be 7-Eleven. It's a convenience store with the bright light that contrasts with the village feel, and it's just so it's disgraceful.
It's
what we've done.
It's disheartening. Yeah. It's
leave them alone. They'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
But instead, we're modernizing their experience and getting them sick.
Yeah.
It gives us so much compassion and just so much love for the American struggle for diet and health, because we aren't just being lazy. We aren't just being all of those things. Like, we have to fight extra hard to be healthy here. And it really is, it's really tough because you can say no to 90% of stuff and still be infiltrated with crap. You know, like it's literally like you're fighting a constant battle against everything that's coming at you, whether it's, you know, in the water, in your cosmetics or in your food or whatever it is. There's just this constant onslaught of things that are not natural for us. And so even if you're trying to be hypervigilant, there's still like 20% of the stuff that's getting through. And it's really tough. The battle is no joke here in America.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really true. And in fact, it's a big part of one of the coaching programs that we just launched with the Body Mind Roadmap is helping people navigate even paleo and primal now, because even being in that category, you know, and being like, well, I'm primal or I'm paleo, and not that there's a paleo aisle yet in most stores, but we're getting close to that. Chock full of processed products that check the box because they're lacking specific ingredients, you know? And so now we're where before that would cover it, you know, you're like, guess what? You're good. If you are checking all these paleo or primal boxes, now it's not the case. Now all of a sudden it's requiring a sort of deeper level of education and understanding around nutrition that for the individual to really wade their way through paleo and primal now in order to be, you know, still kind of meeting the same intent that was there before all the products were created to backfill, you know, the lack of gluten-free donuts.
The intent to model ancestral diet is being washed away in packaging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, now you got to tell me about this subject I know nothing about, but it seems to be becoming very popular in progressive health circles and elsewhere. But the ayahuasca retreat, the spiritual journey.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Look at them smile. They're all into this. Yeah, I understand you're leading a retreat with that specific centerpiece coming up. So what's the scoop here?
You know, it's interesting because Adam and I are both from Northern California. You're from Northern California.
I'm from LA right here.
Oh,
baby.
You actually, are, but you've
lived
been
there a long time.
Yeah, you've been there a while. And we're, you know, from even a little deeper, Mendocino and Lake County, which is just, you know, it's a little bit more bohemian, a little more hippie. And so we kind of grew up in a culture where a lot of people grew marijuana, a lot of people did psychedelics. It was kind of somewhat of a cultural norm. And so, you know, I started doing psychedelics at a really young age, you know, probably 14. I did my first, I ate mushrooms for the first time. And it's not that I'm
that was for one of your finals at middle school.
Exactly.
Said, okay, kids, we're going to do the mushrooms tomorrow.
Here we go.
Now, it wasn't that bad in Mendocino, but for those of you unfamiliar, this coastal county in Northern California has been the marijuana growing capital for many years prior to legality, but way out in the forest, it was a big deal. And still is now, you know, I guess
and
there's
with
more.
That, with that comes sort of a culture, and a lot of that culture is around, you know, other substances. And so, you know, I'm not recommending that kids do it that young. It's like, obviously that worked out for me. Okay. But it just was one of those things where we had access and a lot of people were doing it. And so, I just remember the first time that I did psychedelic mushrooms, I had a real clear vision that all of the things that seemed so important to me and like such a big deal in my 13, 14 year old mind were suddenly so minimal. And there was such a bigger vision of what it meant to be human and what was important in life. And a lot of that had to do with just being loving, being grounded, being centered, and being available in your life for the magic that is there. And this is a pretty profound experience for a young person to have, but I'm so grateful because it molded a lot of the way that I created my life as I got older. And I actually stayed in touch with psychedelics through my years and, you know, tried various things growing up and kind of took a break in my adult years because just busy and working and just kind of got away from it. But, it seems as though psychedelics and ayahuasca and magic mushrooms and all of these things are sort of making a comeback in terms of people realizing the tremendous emotional and cognitive benefits that can come from trying them and from having facilitated experiences. And so ayahuasca it's kind of the mothership of psychedelics. It's definitely like the big whamma-jamma. You know, you want to be in a guided, safe place. You want to have a shaman or someone who's very familiar with the medicine. And we've been lucky enough to have those experiences. And this last year, we went to Costa Rica to a place called Rhythmia, where they lead guided ayahuasca retreats, and had an incredible life-changing experience and just felt even more dedicated to fall in alignment with helping people find their way to these tools. And again, back to that emotional intelligence, it really helps you to understand your mindscape and understand where you're coming from emotionally and sort of weed through the things that are getting in the way of the person that you really want to be and heal some of the broken places in your heart and soul so that you can move forward as a more whole person. And so for me, that's been, I won't speak for Adam, I'll let him, you know, kind of speak his own side of the story, but it's been such a wonderful benefit to my heart and soul. And I just love being in alignment with helping people to discover that.
Bam. So I think like one of the things.
Other than that, it's really dangerous. Don't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it's probably not for you. So don't try. But I mean, it is important to say though, that's like, it seems like it should go without saying, but unfortunately it doesn't. That like ultimately sharing your own experiences about something should have no bearing on how you go about living your life, you know, but how else do you talk about this stuff, you know? So we certainly don't recommend like that people go and do it. You know, it's like, this isn't something that I say everybody should do, but there's no doubt that there's some benefit to be had for the people who are called by it, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. and are interested in doing it. And the most important thing in all of that is to be experimenting with this stuff in a safe place that's reputable, that has a good track record and medical support, and it's in a country where it's legal, and the, you know what I mean? You got to just check all of these boxes of safety and sort of just, you know, I don't know what the right word is, but you just have to get it put in the right container, you know, in from my perspective. And I think the Rythmia is like the place that has really nailed that. I mean, I'm sure that there are many more, but it's the one that we're familiar with. And like, from my perspective with this stuff, it's like, you know, I'm super analytical. Like, I overthink almost everything, you know, to the nth degree. And it served me well in a lot of ways, but it's not a very good way to get to know your own mind, you know, has been my experience. Like, analyzing your own thoughts just leads to
rumination. One of the great health consequences of modern times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Exactly. You're just chasing this stuff around and around. And without any real way to sort of step back and view that process, you're just going to be chasing your tail, you know, at least that was certainly my experience with it. And I will say that ayahuasca was one thing that allowed me to step back and see what's going on. And so like when you're going through this loop in your head and you're like, yeah, but this is how it is, but this is how it is, but this is how it is. It's very difficult to say, but what if it's not? And ayahuasca says it very clearly. Like, I'm like, but no, this is it. And it's like, but what if it isn't? And you're like, oh shit, what if it isn't? And then all of a sudden there's this entire other world of possibility of how you think about things, how things from your past affect you, how you want to move forward with the way that you process the information around you and the things that you're worried about just opens up, and you get to pick what parts of it you want to keep. But it's like, it just shakes up the snow globe, so to speak, to a point where, you know, you have access to a perspective that wasn't there before, you know, and that's my experience with it. And
trip out on that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, and again, it isn't for everybody.
Why not?
Well, I mean, there are actually,
we want you to be safe, all that stuff. It's a hallucinogenic, whatever, but, why are you couching that? Is there a reason?
Well, if you actually do have history of mental health issues in your family, like particularly males between the age, I think, of like 16 and 22, if you have schizophrenia or anything that runs in your family, you need to be aware of that. So there are some actual, some contraindications. If you've been on antidepressants, it's definitely, especially SSRIs, there's a huge contraindication, especially with ayahuasca. So there are some real things to consider and to weigh out. And the best thing you can do is really do the research for what you think you might want to try. Some of the safeties or, you know, some of the, like, for instance, nobody's ever overdosed on mushrooms. So for all intents and purposes, it's a pretty safe thing to try, but you would want to go and do research and read about it. And if you're on any medications, or if you've had any depression issues, if you've had any of that kind of stuff in your life, you would want to really take a fine tooth comb through the data out there and see if something like that is a good idea for you. And again, like Adam said, you know, or find a safe place where it's legal. This is one of the things that we love about Rythmia, is that there's a fully licensed medical staff, and it's completely legal in the country of Costa Rica. So they get your medical history. They find out what exactly is going on with you to see if it is a right fit for you. So, you know, I think it's just one of those things where you have to take a lot of personal responsibility, but if you are called to it, and there is like this intuitive thing that happens where people just are like, this sounds interesting to me, I'm curious what's there for me, then I think it can be a wonderful tool to explore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, your descriptions make anyone curious. Yeah. You could have been talking about reading the Celestine Prophecy, but you're talking about tripping out in Peru. But so if I checked all those boxes and passed my physical and it was at the safe place, would you strongly recommend it to me, or would you see certain people, their sticks too far up their butt and they're not going to get a positive experience out of it? Or is it like universally positive experience for people that are, healthy to going in?
I think the biggest thing is about how you process the experience, whether you consider it positive or not, because it may be difficult in the sense that you have some difficult insights, or you learn some things about yourself that maybe aren't the best. You see, you know, ways that you are, or you see things you've done in the past that might be painful and might be hard to look at. So if you're the kind of person who looks at that and says, oh, I don't ever want to do that again because that sucked, this was horrible, I had a horrible trip, oftentimes it may not be that it was a horrible trip, but it may be that you're looking at stuff that's difficult to look at. And that's part of the process. So we always say it's not a party drug. Like, these aren't party drugs. You know, that you can have beautiful experiences and see pretty lights and some cool psychedelic things, but oftentimes you're digging through the archives of your life and finding the tough spots that need some love and some care and some healing around. So
yeah.
I think that's really the thing about it, is that you can't go in expecting that you're going to have this party or this awesome, you know, oh, this is so rad. Like, it's not like getting drunk and partying with your friends. You're doing hard work around the things that are there for you. And that, if you're ready to do that, and if you're prepared for that, and you're willing to look at that stuff, it can be tremendously beneficial and healing.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I think that fortunately there's psilocybin, MDMA, and ayahuasca are all getting studied pretty heavily right now. Like, it's bubbling up, and mostly because of the anecdotal evidence originally, and then now some of the early studies with dealing with treatment resistant PTSD, which has been uncrackable from like a normal pharmaceutical perspective. And now you're seeing guys that are coming out of some of these initial trials, it's like an 87% success rate, right? With treatment resistant PTSD.
So they've tried all the drugs.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And they're still they're still in pain and suffering.
Yep. And they're still stuck, you know, and now you're seeing this just done. It's fixed, you know, and depending on the different processes, but MAPS has done a handful of studies with this stuff. And so if that's you out there listening, you know, if you suffer from PTSD or you have this stuff going on, 100% go to MAPS.org and look at the studies that these guys are doing. It's the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. And this is what they're looking at. You know, there's trials to get in on. There's all of this stuff to do. And it's like, if that's you and you're suffering, this is a leaf I would turn over,
mm-hmm.
you know,
absolutely.
and do the research and figure out if it's the right thing, because why fuck around, you know, if it can just be over.
And honestly, I mean, and I love to kind of like tail on to that most people are suffering in their own unique way. We've all had traumas. We've all had things that have happened to us in our lives. And, you know, maybe you've developed really great tools around how to do self-healing. And if that's the case, great. But
yes, I'm usually right at all times.
Yeah, exactly. So you're good.
I'm one of the few people I know that has no past trauma and
right.
never wrong.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I don't know if I should do it or not. But
you may not be a candidate.
Skip it.
Maybe I'd be like the best candidate ever.
Yeah.
Welcome. Well,
yeah.
Everyone's like rolling out the red carpet. Here he comes.
Finally, you know, we got him.
The most perfect person in the world is now going, welcome to the gate. Okay, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, and I just think that it's important because we all should be taking time to heal. You know, we should all be taking time and space, even if it's just healing the stress of life, the stress of work, the stress of, you know, our food systems and everything that's coming at us. And maybe that works for you with just having a meditation every day, or maybe you have other tools where you're able to work that stuff out. But I would say that most of us come up against repeating issues in our life. The same thing kind of happens in a different way.
That must suck. I can't imagine.
Poor people.
And we feel like, why does this thing keep happening to us? Or maybe we don't even realize, we don't have the like ability to see that it's the same thing in a different
what
pattern.
What repeating issue?
It's brand new, first day every
what
day.
What do you mean I'm always late? Today it was raining and there was traffic, so it doesn't count.
It's all the other people who drive like assholes, not me.
But I got in another accident today. Another jerk cut me off.
This
is the third accident of the month.
Exactly. Huh? Or you're always fighting with your family members. Or there's, you know, there's just all these repeating patterns where maybe instead of digging in your heels and being more right about it, maybe there's a place that you can see, like Adam said, you can zoom out and see this from a new perspective. And it offers you a lot of space to navigate life in a new way that maybe wasn't available before.
You guys going to do a show on this, or have you already on Be the Wellness?
Yeah, mm-hmm. we've done actually a
17
couple,
shows.
Yeah, exactly. Two. We've done one with Jerry, who's the founder of Rhythmia. And so you can find that on our podcast. Jerry Powell. Yeah, okay. Yep. Jerry Powell. I'm like, why is this not coming to me? Jerry Powell. And then we've also done a wrap up after we had our experience, just talking about our experience in great detail. So
nice.
Yeah. People
All right.
can check that out.
I'm on that.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And,
thank you.
And Dennis McKenna.
Yeah, we've had Dennis McKenna on, who's Terrence McKenna's brother, who they were mycologist, right?
Ethnobotanist.
Ethnobotanist, yeah. Thank you. And did a lot of exploratory work around psilocybin, let's say. Yeah, so they were kind of the psychonaut pioneers in the 70s and spent a bunch of time in the Amazon you know, basically taking various mushrooms and reporting on their experiences, but have, you know, since then written several books and sort of been the pioneers in this field.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. And Dennis now he's on the board of the Hefter Institute, which is they study similar to MAPS. They're studying psilocybin specifically for all of this kind of stuff. And he speaks, actually we caught him at PaleoFX. He was speaking at PaleoFX about entheogens and all of this stuff. And we caught him there and pinned him down for a podcast. And so it's just a good one to get some sort of the history of how long this has been present in the States and like what the history of legalization / studying / Schedule 1 / not studying and kind of how all of this stuff went. Because while it seems new, it's been going on here for a really long time.
And Michael Pollan recently wrote a book too, How to Change Your Mind About Psychedelics, which is a really great resource for people. And what I love about it is that it's written for regular people. You know, it's like people who really don't have a dog in the game, so to speak, and are really looking for the science and the evidence of what's actually there to be learned.
The analytical types.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, where it didn't need mushrooms at 14. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, you know, and it's interesting because Adam and I are really on the separate ends of the spectrum with that. Like, he didn't do any of this stuff till well into adulthood, and I did it earlier on. And it's like, there's all kinds of people out there, and, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to be a little hippie child like me growing up in the Redwoods to necessarily do this stuff, because I would say there's something for most people in it, but you have to decide for yourself.
Whew.
Yeah.
Be the Wellness.
Yeah.
.com, right?
Yep.
We can learn about these different retreats. So it sounds like a varied retreat experience.
Yes. Yeah.
And this ayahuasca one is distinct, going to this facility where that's the centerpiece.
Absolutely.
Correct. The other stuff is about mountain bike and surfing and stand-up paddling.
Yeah.
And if you sign up for both, you get a discount for the
absolutely
trippy one at the end.
And yeah. I should
for
say...
For sure. Brad said that if it didn't exist, it now exists.
Say Brad. Yeah,
just
deal.
Enter the code Brad Kearns.
Brad's double. Daily work. Double. Yeah.
Exactly.
Ding, ding, ding.
But I should add that I do offer a program called Authentic Self, which is a coaching program around the Rhythmia retreat. So you'll get actually coaching in preparation for it for about 6 months.
That's a great idea.
And then, yeah, and then integration coaching on the other side of it, because it's a profound experience. And so I love being able to help prepare people emotionally and give you some spiritual and cognitive tools to go into that experience. And then on the other side, how to really integrate what you learned, what came out of that experience without just being thrown back into regular life going, okay, I had this life-changing experience, but how do I integrate this into reality? So, so it's called Authentic Self, and it's an option that you can add on with the retreat.
Just click the box. That's all you have to do.
All the boxes.
I mean, I feel like if you're going to go to the trouble to do this, you should also do the Authentic Self.
Yeah, especially if you're, you know, if you're nervous about the experience and you want a little extra support and, you know.
Or you've always been right your whole life.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, why would I start now?
Something could happen down at this retreat. I'm really nervous about this before and after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I just think that, you know, anytime you have like more tools to pull from, and we do a lot of breath work, we do a lot of meditation, we do a lot of things to give you tools so that within the experience, when if you're having a rough time, you'd be amazed how happy you are to know, oh yeah, what about that breath work we did, or what about that meditation, or it really makes a difference in navigating these more difficult pieces of the experience.
Can you give that as a gift to someone?
You can.
That really deserves it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be trippy to put under the Christmas tree, huh?
Well, you know, there have been people, we were actually talking to folks there that came with friends that didn't know what the retreat was. Just, oh, I'm going to a retreat.
Want
to
go?
Show up. And then they're like, wait, what? We're doing what?
Wow.
So yeah, it could happen. You could surprise somebody.
Yeah, that could happen.
Adam and Vanessa Lambert, great show.
Thanks,
great to catch up.
Yeah,
oh my gosh. Just a wide, this could have the record for the widest ranging show. I mean, like it or not, we'll check our downloads, but we got down.
We got
the low down on the download.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us, man.
Thank you for listening to the show. We would love your feedback at getoveryourselfpodcast@gmail.com. And we would also love if you could leave a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a hassle. You have to go to desktop iTunes, click on the tab that says ratings and reviews, and then click to rate the show anywhere from 5 to 5 stars. And it really helps spread the word so more people can find the show and get over themselves, because they need to. Thanks for doing it.